Today's shir is Masechta Avodah Zarah Daf Mem. We will begin on Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, 8 lines from the bottom, with the words Hadvash. The Mishnah, when I had mentioned the various items that we may purchase from the Akum, said honey is permitted. Ask them the Mas Shlomai Nechishlo. If the Mishnah said that we're allowed to purchase the honey, obviously there was a reason to be concerned, and the Gemara wants to identify what indeed perhaps would be the concern in buying honey. Imishim Eruvei, if the concern, suggests the Gemara, would be that perhaps wine was mixed into this honey, says the Gemara, Mishra Sari, wine would certainly spoil the honey. That's the way Rashi explains that the Gemara's question is regarding mixture of wine. There are Rishonim that explain that the Gemara's question is not specifically only regarding wine. The Gemara's question is regarding all different types of items that might have been mixed into the honey. And the Gemara is saying is that any item that would be mixed into the honey would become spoiled when they're mixed into the honey, because the Mefarshim explain, according to this explanation, that when something is mixed into honey, it gets dissolved into honey, and part of it getting dissolved means that it gets spoiled. If the concern, says the Gemara, Mishum Bishuli Avdi Kachavim, that the Goy in processing the honey cooks the honey, says the Gemara, there is no issue of Bishul Akam honey, because Nech Kamashu Chai, it's honey is something that may be can be eaten raw, and anything that could be eaten raw is not subject to the halachas of Bishul Akam. Actually, when we had discussed this question earlier in the week about what is or isn't subject to Bishul Akam, the Gemara said that something that's Eina Oilal Shulchan Nachkama Shuchai was one thing that was not subject to the halachas of Bishul Akam, and the other thing the Gemara said was something that's Eina Oilal Shulchan Malachim. And when we learned that Gemara, we mentioned that the Rishonim discuss, are these two opinions complementing each other, or that they disagree and each one uses a different leniency? Our Gemara clearly is showing that everybody agrees to the heter of Nechel Kamay Shuchai, that something that could be eaten raw is not subject to the halachas of Bishul Akam, because if we were to say to Rishonim that the Manda Omer that says that it's Ein Oil Shulchan Malachim is the test for Bishul Akam, so then how could our Gemara, according to that opinion, just mention this, say that there's no problem Bishul Akam? Obviously, say to Rishonim, everybody agrees that something that could be eaten raw is not subject to Bishul Akam. If the concern, says the Gemara, Mishum Giuli of the Kachavim, that the pot, the vessels in which the honey was processed, were used for non-kosher ingredients, nois tam of gamhu, that taste of the non-kosher meat that might have been there is a nois tam of gam in the honey, and therefore it's mutter. And here too, the Rishonim say, the way to understand what the Gemara means to say is that actually the Gemara is saying there's a double point. Number one is that there is no reason to be concerned that meat was mixed into the honey, because meat being mixed into the honey would give it only a bare taste. It's nice time of gum, and therefore that concern isn't here. And furthermore, if we're worried that the pot that was used to process the honey might have been used previously for non-kosher meat, we have the rule that we have been discussing, that Stam Kalim Eina B'nei Yoyman, we could assume that the pot wasn't used in the last 24 hours, and since we could assume that the pot wasn't used in the last 24 hours, we could safely assume that any Tam that comes out from this pot is a nice Tam of Gam, and as we've been learning, a nice Tam of Gam is Mutter. That is the way the Rishonim explained the Gemara. The interesting question that I saw that some Rishonim ask, based on this explanation, is that we're saying that meat and honey, that combination is a combination that's nice nam of gam. So I saw that there's some Rishonim that actually asked that we know that there are many recipes that call for honey and meat to be mixed together. We have honey glazed. We know that there are some very delicious foods that are honey glazed meats. So how's our Gemara saying that this is a situation of nice and tam lebgam? So I saw two answers. One answer is that when is honey a good combination with meat? Honey is a good combination with meat when the honey and meat have other spices and seasonings there. But when there's only honey and meat, it's a situation of nice tam lebgam. That's one explanation I saw. Another explanation is that indeed honey is beneficial to meat, but meat is not beneficial to honey. Our Gemara is referring to a situation where we're processing honey, and the Gemara is saying that if you put meat into that, that honey will be ruined. But of course, if we're preparing perhaps meat and we'll put honey on the meat, that the Gemara is not discussing, and indeed in that situation actually it may add to the taste of the meat. The Mishnah spoke about the next case, where Havdavdonius, and as we explained, as Rashi explains, Havdavdonius are clusters of grapes. Apish shem menatvois, even though they're dripping grape juice, em shem hechshem mashka, which as we explained, we know that all foods, in order to become susceptible to tumma, have to be mukhshel kabel tumma. And mukhshel kabel tumma means that they became wet with one of the seven types of liquids. Grape juice, wine, being one of those types of liquids. Says our Mishnah that if the grape juice came out on the grapes, that doesn't cause that food should become mukshar lekabel tumma. Vermini asked the Gemara, there's a braisa that we learned in Masechta Shabbos. The braisa says in Masechta Shabbos, haboitza legas, if somebody is harvesting grapes to take it to the white grape press, and grape juice oozes out of those grapes, shamei amahuksha, that grape juice is machshir those grapes, lekabolas tumma. Hillel disagrees and says the loy huksher, they don't become mukshir lekabel tumma. However, says the Gemara, that ultimately, and this is, as I said, the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, that when they had this debate, and things came to a vote, and actually Shammai's position prevailed. Voidle Hillel Shammai, and Hillel agreed to Shammai that grape juice oozing out of the grapes that are being taken for pressing become mukshir lekabel tumma. So we have a question. Our Mishnah says that the grape juice oozing out is not mukshir, does not cause the grapes to become mukshir lekabel tumma. And here we're saying that they do. Why did Hillel ultimately agree to Shammai? So the Gemara Masechta Shabbos gives two reasons. One reason is mimnei hanoishchus. Since the person that does this knows that the grapes are squeezing one on top of the other, and he doesn't want them to squeeze, so he separates them. And when he separates them, it's invariable that there's going to be juice coming out. And that's why the halach is that it's considered juice that he wants, because the halach is that the only juice that's machsh lekabel tumma is juice that somebody is satisfied with, and this is considered juice that he's satisfied with. That's one explanation. Another explanation is that the person who's taking grapes to be squeezed wants to know the quality and the amount of juice that's there, and therefore he's happy to have some juice come out. And therefore, even Hillel will agree that it's machsh the grapes lekabolas tumma. How do we reconcile what we learned in that braisa in Masechta Shabbos with what we're learning in our Mishnah? Answers the Gemara, hasam kabay lo lamashka. There, it refers to a situation where the person is taking the grapes because he wants to squeeze them. He's taking them to the wine press. So therefore, certainly, as we just explained, the juice that comes out is something that he actually wants. Hacha, however, in our Gemara, Lekabayle Lamashka, he's not anxious to have the juice. He's taking the grapes for eating, and therefore, since he's taking the grapes for eating, the juice is not something that he wants should ooze out. He wants the juice to remain in his grapes that he's eating, that they should be juicy grapes, and therefore, the only time liquids are machsher are liquids that the person wants. These are liquids that the person doesn't want, and therefore, since they're liquids that the person doesn't want, there is no issue of hechsher. In fact, Tosfos asks a very strong question. Tosfos asks that the teretz that the Gemara gives is so very obvious, because the Gemara began by quoting the Braisa, that the Braisa uses the words haboitza lagas, that somebody is taking the grapes for pressing. So the teretz is obvious that our Mishnah is talking about grapes for eating, and that Braisa is talking about grapes for drink, for juice. So how come, what was the back and forth? What's the shock of the Tari in our Gemara? So Tosfos answers that in the Havamina, the Gemara assumed that Hillel did not differentiate between if you're taking the grapes lagas or you're taking the grapes lachila. And that the only reason the Braisa used the words habois lagas was to teach us that that Hillel was makel even by boitz lagas. And certainly he would be makel by boitz lachila. But now the Gemara answers that no, that the Braisa is being extremely precise. And that the Braisa is teaching us that only haboitz lagas, because he wants the juice, that's why we have a situation of hechsher. Our Mishnah, where he's not interested in the juice, however, will not be matched those grapes, the Kabbalah's tumah. The next case of food that one may buy from the Akum that the Mishnah mentioned was trish eina trufa, was fish that's not minced. Tanarabonim. Is a truth shena trufa? What is considered fish that's considered whole, that isn't in the category of minced fish that we can't buy from an akum? Kol shiroi shivishidrinika. If you could discern the head and the spine, then you'll know if it's a kosher fish. Because as we've learned, non-kosher fish have narrow heads and no spine, and kosher fish have wide heads and they have a spine. The Mishnah said that if you have brine that has fish in it, then it's a kosher, that's proof that that brine is from kosher fish. Kosher kilbis achas or shtei kilbis, one or two of these kilbis fish shaitet esbar, swimming in this brine. And as we've discussed previously, to understand this Gemara, there's a very big machlokes rishonim. Rashi is of the opinion that this fish that swims in the kosher brine is a non-kosher species of fish. And that a very interesting phenomena, this non-kosher fish develops in brine, and that's why, that is the proof that this is kosher brine. The difficulty with Rashi is, first of all, as the Rishonim asked, this is a difficult scientific phenomena. The Gemara is saying that the non-kosher fish is the proof that the brine is kosher. Furthermore, why is there no concern, asked the Rishonim according to Rashi Pshat, that you have this non-kosher fish swimming in the brine, and it's imparting taste into the brine, and therefore that should prohibit the entire brine? So to that question, I saw a number of answers. The simplest answer is that kovash, the issue of fish brine, the issue that something becomes also when it's kept together, is only when it's kovash for 24 hours, when they're together for 24 hours. And here we're referring to a situation where they're not together necessarily for 24 hours. Another answer, which we'll understand better soon in the Gemara, is that the Gemara differentiates between fish brine and the fish itself. And here, since we're talking about fish brine, we could be more lenient, as we'll soon see in the Gemara. A third teretz that I saw is, as we just said when we quoted the opinion of Rashi, this is a very interesting phenomenon, that the non-kosher, that the kosher fish brine is developing non-kosher fish. And therefore, the regular halachas that apply to kosher fish or non-kosher fish don't apply in a situation where the non-kosher fish was developed from kosher fish brine. However, because of the questions that we just mentioned, there are Rishayim that have a very different explanation of our Gemara. And their explanation of our Gemara is that that the kilbis that is a proof that it's a kosher fish is talking about that what they would do customarily is that if they were selling brine, they would take the fish of that type of brine that they were selling and put it in the brine. So the fact that I have a kosher fish here is clearly an indication that this is kosher brine, because the fish that they put next to it is a proof what kind of fish the brine came from. The obvious question in understanding this Gemara is that since this is all done by hand, that the person puts in the brine, why are we not to be concerned that the person whoever's doing it just put a kosher fish next to the non-kosher brine? So the Rishonim respond interestingly, and they say that we need not be concerned about that, because, and we're going to have this concept later in our shiur, the halacha is not concerned that somebody is going to do something so obviously wrong, that somebody is going to go take deliberately non-kosher fish and put it by non-kosher fish brine with the intent to deceive. The halacha is not concerned that somebody is going to do something so obviously dishonest, and therefore this is a good proof according to that explanation that this fish brine is coming from kosher fish. Ask the Gemara, the Braisa said if there's one of two of these kilbuses swimming there, it's a proof that it's kosher fish. Ask the Gemara, hash the kilbus achatz amritshari, if one fish is a proof that it's kosher, shtei kilbus mabai, so do we need to have two fish as a proof? If one fish is a proof, why do we need two? Answer the Gemara, lakasha kamba psuchis kamba stumas. And here too we have a machloikis Rashi and Tysus, how to learn the Gemara. Rashi says that when we have an open barrel, we need to be concerned that fish fell into this barrel, and therefore the only time we have a raya that this is indeed kosher fish brine is if we have two fish, that's a proof that it's coming, that this is kosher brine. But if the barrel is closed, so there is no concern that fish from somewhere else fell in here, and there one fish will be a proof that's kosher fish brine. Tysus learns just the opposite. Tysus says that when we have an open we actually always need two fish to prove that it's kosher, that the brine is from kosher fish. But if we have a closed barrel, therefore we have to have two fish to be an adequate proof. But if we have an open barrel, We always have the possibility to be that there were originally here two kosher fish, just one jumped out, and therefore if the barrel is open, two fish and one fish will be enough of a proof. There are mefarshim that actually want to connect this machlokes that we've just quoted with the machlokes that we mentioned a moment ago. What type of fish? Rashi, according to his opinion, says that the fish develops internally, and therefore he says really one fish is enough unless it's open, where we have to be concerned that something fell in from the outside. Tysus is speaking about that the fish brine manufacturer has to bring fish. So when he brings two fish, that's a proof that he meant that it's really kosher. But if it's open, we need to be concerned that Itaka brought two fish and one jumped out. There is another opinion in the Rishonim how to learn Stumas and Psuchas, and that opinion learns as follows. If we have here a number of barrels of fish, so if we have them open, and between all of these open barrels, we will have two fish, that will be a proof that all of the barrels are kosher. On the other hand, when the fish barrels are closed, we have to have one fish in each barrel to prove that each individual barrel is a barrel of kosher fish brine. So we discussed earlier in this braisa that the head and the spine of a fish are a proof if this fish is a kosher or non-kosher fish. And the way Rashi explains the Gemara, and that's the way we're going to learn the Gemara, that the Gemara is teaching us that there are two new simonim how to know if a fish is kosher. And that is the shape of the head and the spine. There are Rishonim that dispute this understanding, for they explain that it's difficult to say that these are simonim. The simonim, as the Gemara will soon say, are the fins and scales. And rather, what they say, the way to understand the Gemara, they explain that the way to understand the Gemara is that if we have a fish that doesn't have fins and scales, or so this can be a proof that it's a kosher fish, because most kosher fish have these simonim. Or it's referring to a situation where we're talking about fish that's been already processed and doesn't have the fins and scales. So there we could rely on these simonim. But never according to those Rishonim, the opinion of the Rosh and the opinion of the Ravid, did the Gemara ever mean to say that these should be full-fledged simonim. Again, we're going to learn the Gemara like Rashi, that the Gemara is teaching us that there's another way of telling if it's a kosher fish, and that is by looking at the head and the spine. Itmar, Rav Huna Amar, Rav Huna's opinion is, Ach Teiroi Shidra Nikar. You have to be able to identify the shape of the head and the spine, and then and only then will you know if it's a kosher fish. Rav Nachman however says, Ay Roisha Shadra, you don't have to have both simonim. The shape of the head or the spine itself is enough of a simon. Ask the Gemara, Moser of Akva B'chuma, the Mishnah says, in Masech Techulin, Ubedogim Kol Sheyesh Lei Snap of a Kaskeses, that the Torah clearly indicates that the simonim of a fish are the fins and scales. So the Mishnah is teaching us specifically fins and scales. Why, how are we now introducing new simonim? So Rishonim ask, why is the Gemara asking a question from a Mishnah in Masech Techulin? That's not test. The Gemara should have asked from a pasuk in the Torah. The Torah clearly says that the proof of what is a kosher fish is snap of a kaskesis. Why do we have to ask a question from a Mishnah when we can ask a question from a pasuk? So the Rishonim respond that the pasuk itself, we could say, is not necessarily conclusive. That the Torah is not necessarily giving us all of the simonim. And there's a very nice raya to this teretz. Because as we've been learning, the simonim of a kosher fish a snap of a kaskesis, fins and scales. But the Gemara Masechta Nida says that there is no fish that has scales that doesn't have fins. So the Gemara asks, if so, why don't we just say the simon of the scales, and that will be enough of a proof that it's a kosher fish? So the Gemara answers, Lahagdil Toiro Ladira. The entire purpose is just to teach us this fact that every fish that has scales has fins. So we see that the Torah has been using a very interesting approach when it comes to discussing the simonim of fish. And therefore the pasuk is not a raya. But the Mishnah that teaches us that the simonim are exclusively fins and scales, that's a question. How do we understand that Mishnah now that our Gemara is giving us other simonim? But then the Rishonim ask, why does the Gemara choose to ask this question only now where we've learned the opinion of Rav Huna and Rav Nachman? Immediately when we learned the Braisa, the beginning of this piece of Gemara, that taught us the simonim about the head and the spine, the Gemara should have right away asked, how could the Braisa be saying this if there's a Mishnah that says that simonim are snap of a kaskesis? So some Rishonim respond that if we didn't see that Rav Huna and Rav Nachman were arguing on how to understand the Braisa, we would perhaps suggest that the Braisa is not an authoritative Braisa. But now that we see the Rav Huna and Rav Nachman are disputing how to understand the Braisa, so it's clearly an indication that this is an authoritative Braisa, and therefore the Gemara's question is, how could this Braisa be authoritative when it flies in the face of that Mishnah? That's one answer. Another answer that I saw is, as we have been discussing, and we're going to learn this very soon, the Gemara differentiates between the fish sauce and the fish itself. So at the beginning, the Gemara assumed that perhaps that brice is only speaking about the fish sauce. Fish sauce, since it's less of a shayla altogether, for that we could rely on the shape of the head and the spine. But now that we see Rav Huna and Rav Nachman are discussing not just the eating of the fish sauce, but they're even discussing the permissibility of fish based on these simonim, so Gemara's question is a very strong question. How can we rely on this when the Mishnah says that the simon is the snap of its kaskasis? Answers the Gemara, Amra Baya, Ki Tanya Hi, but Ara Palmuda, the Dam Rishayla Temeyim. The Gemara answers as follows. Normally, and again, we're following Rashi's opinion. Normally, we could rely on the shape of the head and on the presence of a spine to be a proof if the fish is kosher or not. But there are exceptions that a fish that have a narrow head and don't have a spine, the Bara and Palmuda, that the Gemara is teaching us that even though they don't have these simonim, if they have the Mishnah Masechta Chulin is teaching us that if they have fins and scales, they still are kosher fish. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmei Dula, Machloikis, the Machloikis between Rav Nachman and Rav Huna about if you need both simonim or only one simon, is Latava B'tzirin, when it comes to using the fish brine, the fish sauce. Ava B'gufa, when it comes to eat the fish itself, the V'hakol Osir Achei Rosh V'Ruba Shedrin Nikar. You have to have both simonim, the shape of the head and the spine. So the Rishonim debate, why is there a difference between the fish sauce and the actual fish? The fish sauce comes from the fish. So I saw two explanations in the Rishonim. One explanation is the explanation of Tosfos, that when we speak about fish sauce, so the fish sauce, if we're concerned for adulteration, that somebody might have mixed into the fish sauce some non-kosher fish sauce, it will certainly be bottle bereive. On the other hand, Tosfos goes on to say, but if we're talking about whole pieces of fish are a barrier, and a barrier doesn't become bottle, and therefore, if we have whole pieces of fish, we can't rely on bittel, and that's why in such a situation, we have to be more stringent about the fish versus the fish sauce. That is one teretz that Tosfos suggests. And as the Mefarshim explained in understanding Tosfos, it isn't specifically only in a case where you have a whole fish, because our Gemara is speaking about chopped fish, where you don't have whole pieces of fish, but the halacha is still the same, because the halacha is that if you have a slice of fish, it's still a chaticha arui l'skabed, and the halacha is that a chaticha harui l'skabed does not become bottle. That's one explanation to Rishonim give in distinguishing between fish sauce and fish. But then I saw another explanation given by the Rishonim, and that is that fish sauce is considered only zeya. It's only considered an excretion of the fish, and something that's considered only an excretion, a zeya, the halacha is that it's not considered usur like the fish itself. What would be the nachmina between these two approaches in the Rishonim? Is if the fish sauce were extracted through cooking. So if it was extracted through cooking, it's not just zeya. So if we say that the reason we're making on fish sauce is because it's zeya, we could not rely on the heter. But if we say, like Tosfos says, that the heter here is because the fish sauce becomes bottle, the non-kosher fish sauce becomes bottle in the kosher fish sauce, so it makes no difference how the fish sauce was extracted, we could be more lenient with fish sauce. Amar Rav Zeira, Mireish Havim Matvilim Betziran. At the beginning, I would dip my food in fish sauce, even if there was only one sign, the head or the spine. However, Kivin the Shemana Lahadar and Yehuda Mishmei the Ula, that Machloikis Latavel Betziran, that's where we have Machloikis from Nachman and Rav Huna. Ava Gufan, but in the fish itself, Devihakal also Ache Roish Veshedrin Nikar, you have to have both Simonim. So now I became more stringent, and Betziran Namel Apilin, and I didn't use the brine unless I had both simonim. Amra Papa, Hilchasa, the halacha is that you can only use the tris of the akum. Achei roish v'shedrus nikkash kol achas v'achas. You have to have each fish discernible that way. Meisvei asked the Gemara, it says in the Braisa, Chaticha sheyesh ben simen, iya pieces of fish that have on them simonim, that it's a kosher fish, bein bekul and bein mektsosin, if either all the slices of fish, or just some of the slices of fish. But even if one out of 100 slices have the simonim kul mitaris, then all the other slices may be eaten. And indeed, quotes the Bryson incident. A guy once brought an entire barrel full of pieces of fish. And one of them had simonim that it's from a kosher fish. So we see that you don't need to have a sign on each and every piece of fish. A simon on each and every piece of fish. Answers the Gemara. Tigmar apapa kishichaticha ishavis. Machlokes Rishonim, how to understand this. Rashi explains that the situation is as follows. That we have one slice of fish that has on it the simonim that it's from a kosher fish. Then we have all the other slices that don't have simonim. But you could put all of the slices together and you could see that they're all one big fish just that was cut into pieces. And one piece has the simonim and the rest don't. That is a proof that is enough of a raya on all the other slices. That's how Rashi explains. The Rambam, however, explains that the Rambam is even more lenient. And the Rambam says that if I have a slice of fish that has on it the simonim that this is a kosher, came from a kosher fish, and then we have the other slices that don't have simonim, but we see that the other slices are cut in a manner similar to the way this fish is cut, that is a proof that all of these fish are kosher, and you could use these fishes. Ask the Gemara, particularly if we follow Rashi's pshat, that if we could fit all the slices together, and it's obvious that they come from one fish, Maila Memra, so obvious that it's kosher, what's the chiddush? Answers the Gemara, that it's just a coincidence that we could put them together this way, and it should not be conclusive proof that this is that all these slices are coming from the same fish and are kosher, that we can rely to assume that this is kosher. Says the Gemara, "Nu arba de tzakanta de osel sikra." There was a boatload of tzakanta that came to the town of Sikra. Nafik Rav Huna Bachinina came out. V'chaz by kalfa, he saw scales on the fish, v'sharye, and he relied on it. So Mefarshim explained that how could we rely on the fact that we have some fish that has simonim to say that all of the fish here are kosher. So one explanation that the Ran give is that we're talking here about salted fish, and you can't keep together in salt together kosher fish and non-kosher fish, because the kosher fish and non-kosher fish, when they're spoiled together, when they're salted together, spoil each other. Another teretz is that we're referring to a case where it was similar to what we just learned, that it was obvious that they all came from the same species, and that's why we could be more lenient. Ask the Gemara. Nafik Rav Huna b'chinana v'chaz b'kelfei, he saw some fish with scales on them, v'shari, and he allowed the entire load to be eaten. Amlei Rava, umika d'shari kai gavna b'asri d'shkicha kalfei, that in a place that there's fish with scales, why is this a proof that all of the fish are kosher? Maybe only some of them were kosher, not all of them. And because of this question, Nafik Shpur the Rava, Rava made a public announcement that Osir, that the fish were Osir. However, Shpur the Rav Huna Bachinina made an announcement for Shari that the fish were Mutter. So the Rishonim point out, how could Rav Huna make a public announcement that the fish were mutter if Rava first made a public announcement that the fish were awesome? So some Rishonim explain that the Gemara's sequence is not actually correct. And first Rav Huna made a public announcement that the fish was mutter, and then Rava made the public announcement that the fish was usur. But since Rav Huna had already made a public announcement that the fish was mutter, he does not need to backtrack from his position. Another pshat that I saw is that it's not that Rav Huna made a public announcement, but Rav Huna had already told the people, had told his Talmidim that this fish was mutter, even though it wasn't a public announcement. The fact that he made this announcement even privately is enough that he can now make a public announcement and not be concerned with Rav's public announcement. But then I saw the Mefarshim ask an obvious question. We're dealing here, as we've been learning the entire Gemara, with a question of a deraisa, non-kosher fish, or asim a deraisa. And Rav is saying that he feels that these fish are non-kosher. So how could Rav Huna be makel in a situation where we're dealing with a shaila of deraisa? Say to Mefarshim, there's a tremendous lesson to be learned in our Gemara, say to Mefarshim. The lesson to be learned in our Gemara is that if Rav Huna had a Mesoira from his Rabbeim that this fish is mutter, he need not be concerned with Rav's opinion, and he could publicly announce that the fish is mutter. Amar Rav Yirmi Medifti, L'di Amali Rapapi, Rapapi told me, Kishar Rav Huna Bachinina, when Rav Huna Bachinina said that the fish is permitted, he meant Betziron, only the brine. As we just explained a moment ago, why we could be more lenient, the explanation of the Rishonim, why we could be more lenient on the fish sauce than on the fish itself. Amar Vashi, L'di Amali Rapapa, Kishar Rav Huna Bachinina, Rav Huna Bachinina said it was mutter, he meant the fil begufa. He said, even the fish itself is mutter. But now loy mesa esrina, and therefore, I will not prohibit this fish. The commonly Rapapa, because I have Rav Huna, Rapapa saying how lenient Rav Huna was. On the other hand, for loy mesa esrina, I'm not going to say that the fish is mutter. Damalei Rav Yehuda Mishmei de Ula. I have what Rav Yehuda said, that the machloikis is only l'tavu b'tzirin, only regarding the fish sauce. Avu gufan, when it comes to the fish itself, devrihakol atchei rosh v'shidra nikash l'kalecha v'echad. And therefore, I'm not going to get involved in this question. Says the Gemara, Yosef Rav Chinana bar Idi kameid Rav Ad bar Hava, v'yosef v'komer, oivik achav v'sheva revi m'loi chavius. If a guy brought a boat filled of barrels of brine. So I saw that Magalus Hashas points out that why does the Gemara say Yosef that he sat twice? So they explain very nice pshat. He was sitting and he wanted to get permission to speak. So he got permission to speak. He stood up to get that permission. And after he got permission to speak, he sat himself down again and said what he had to say. And he said, if an Akum brings a boat full of barrels of brine, v'ninsa kibbutz ma'achsman, and a kibbutz that we discussed at the beginning of Yeshir is found in one of those barrels, psuchis, if all the barrels are open, kulamataris, they're all mutter, stumis, but if they're closed, himutaris, the barrel that has in it this kibbutz will be mutter, v'kulamataris, but all the other barrels will be asur. Amalei menolacha, so he asked him, from where do you know this halacha? So he answered, Mitlosa Kroy Shmili, I heard it from three great individuals. Who are the three great individuals? Rav Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan. The first one explained why were these great individuals called Kroy. So I saw two pshatim. One pshat is, we know Kroy means a pasik. And what he was saying was that these people, in my opinion, are so great, and what they say is as if it was something that it says in a Kroy, in a pasik. That's one explanation I saw. Another explanation is that the word Kroy means master in Hebrew, and he was saying that these are great, three very great individuals. Amrabrun Amarav, Kirve Dovgim, the fatty innards of a fish, V'yiburun, fish roe, fish eggs, Einakochim Elamer Mucha, may only be bought from an expert. Machloikis Rishonim, who is considered a mumcha here? Some Rishonim say mumcha means a trustworthy individual. Another explain mumcha means a person that's a professional who's concerned about his reputation. And therefore, what he says must be accurate. Ramle Ula Reb Destoy de Mimbiri. Midda Kama Rav. If Rav says, Kirvi Dogan Viburim Ein Nechachim El Mumcha, he said, we only allowed to buy from the expert. It must be Meglal, the dat Tamei Isli Uber. It must be the non-kosher fish also have fish roe, and therefore we have to be careful from whom we purchase it. Vermini asked the Gemara, it says in a Braisa, Dag Tamei Mashritz. A non-kosher fish brings forth living fish young. Dag Tamei Matl Mayim. It has eggs. So here it clearly assumes that the Gemara is assuming that non-kosher fish don't have eggs. So what's the concern about fish eggs from non-kosher fish? Answers the Gemara, Sami Mekan Ubran. Indeed, take out the word roe from what Rav said. If you see fish roe, it must be coming from kosher fish because non-kosher fish don't have eggs. Amalei, Rav Zeir, so Rav says, Leitus me. There's no need to delete the word roe from here. Because Tavaya Matila Beininu, both types of fish, kosher fish and non-kosher fish, both give eggs. Elzeh Mashas Bechutz, the kosher fish have eggs outside the body. The eggs are hatched and then they're deposited outside the body. The Zeh Mashas Bifnim, it has eggs, but the eggs hatch while they're still inside the body of the non-kosher fish. Ask the Gemara, Belamalei Mumcha. Again, why do we need a mumcha? Live the besimanim. Why don't we just examine the eggs and we could tell that way if they came from a kosher fish or a non-kosher fish? The Tanya, Kisimanim Beyim. Just like there are simanim on eggs, kach simanim dogim. Ask the Gemara, what does that mean? Simanim dogim salka daitech, that do you think that the sign, that the simanim of fish are identical to the simanim of eggs? Simanim dogim, the simanim of fish, as we learned earlier, snap of a kaskasik sibu, are fins and scales. That aren't the simanim, obviously, by eggs. Eggs don't have fins and scales. Says the Gemara, Ella, what the Bryce means is, ki simanim bayim kach simanim ibri dogim. Like we have simanim on birds' eggs to be able to tell if they came from a kosher bird or a non-kosher bird, so too do we have regarding fish roe. Ve'el simonim bayim, kosher birds' eggs, what are the simonim? Kol shekaitedes v'algugelis. Any egg that narrows v'algugelis and is oval, roi she'echekad, so the one of the ends is flat, that it has a flat bottom, v'roish echad chad, and the other end is pointed, tahira. That is a proof that it's a kosher egg, came from a kosher bird. Shnei rosh echadim, if both ends of the egg are pointed, or shnei rosh echadim, or both ends are flat, tameya came from a non-kosher bird. Chelmay mebechutz, v'chelba mefnim, if the yolk is on the outside, and the white is on the inside, tameya. But if the white is on the outside, the chelmon b'vifnim, the yolk is on the inside, tor, it's a kosher egg. Chelbon v'chelbon muravin zebzeh, if the white and the yolk are mixed together, zeh beis asheretz, it's a proof it's a beis asheretz. So the question is, why do we need a mumcha to tell us if the fish, if this fish roe is kosher or not? Don't we have simonim how to tell? Answers the Gemara, Amarava Kishnimochu. We're talking about a case where the fish eggs were dissolved and those simanim are no longer discernible. That's why we need a mumcha to tell us if the fish egg is kosher or not. Ask the Gemara, Ula Rav Distoy de Mimbiri. According to Rav Distoy de Mimbiri, the Omar, who we just said, Samach Mikuran Iburan, that indeed we should take out the din about fish eggs. Because according to him, non-kosher fish do not produce roe. For Tanya, how does he explain the Braisa? Kisimonim beim kachsimonim ubrei dogim. Isn't this clearly an indication that all fish, even non-kosher fish, produce eggs? Answers the Gemara. Laf terutz mitaratzlei. We, as we learned a moment ago, said that this Braisa is somewhat difficult. And therefore, he's going to say, the way to revise the Braisa is that the Braisa is not speaking about fish eggs, because fish eggs we don't need simonim, because only kosher fish produce fish eggs. But the way to understand the Brisa according to him is Kach Simonim Kirvei Dogim, that the Brisa is teaching us that the Simonim, how to tell the inside of the fish if it's coming from a kosher fish or not. But we explained that the Brisa speaks about flat and pointy. How do we have that? We're talking about the insides of the fish. And it says the Gemara, we're talking about the bladder, and the shape of the bladder, it is in the, is an indication if it came from a kosher fish or a non-kosher fish. Ask the Gemara. We spoke about buying the fish innards or the roe from a mumcha. Ask the Gemara, ain't shom mumcha mai. But what will be the halacha if there is no mumcha? What do we do then? Amr Yehuda, kim the Amr ani malachtem. If the person who's selling the fish says, I was the one that prepared the fish, that is a clear indication that a person would not make this statement unless it was true, because he doesn't want to be caught with a lie, and therefore it's mutarim. The machlokes hapaiskim is how far can we go with this heter, where if the person makes an announcement that I was the one that did it, it's clearly proof. Some say it's only by a person that we know, don't know is a mumcha, but we have no concern about his honesty. But if the person is a choshed, we can't rely on him saying ani malachtim. There are other mefarshim that say that you could rely on ani malachtim even by choshed. And similarly, there's machlek sapayskim, if we could rely on this ani malachtim if a goy made the statement. Rav Nachman Amar Achiyam Eila Dogim Veilev Ivrayim. He has to make a stronger statement. He has to say that this is the fish and this is the innards of the fish. Oile Rav Yehuda Rav Adadaili Kim Dom Ani Malachtim. We don't have to go that far. If he says Ani Malachtim and these are the kosher and that the kosher mutarim. For all shachetus, the Mishnah said that you're allowed to buy leaves of chiltus from the Akam. As my pshita, because as we learned yesterday, the only problem with chiltus was that they cut it with a knife. But the leaves aren't cut with a knife, so why should there be a problem? Pshita. And it says the Gemara, Le'nitzucha el katan shabah. It's speaking about the grains that are in the leaf. Manatayim and dumma nechesh dumma maisim marabe. Maybe we should be concerned that the Akum brought grains that were cut with a non-kosher knife and mixed them in here. Kamash malon, tahash tarak hu dishtarak vas badei. We could assume that the grains that are here came from the leaf that is here, and since the leaf isn't cut with a knife, we need not be concerned about the grain either. We could buy soft olives from the Akum, Pshita, and says the Gemara, even though they're very soft, why are they so soft? Because the Akum put wine in them. The reason they're so soft is because of the oil, not because of any wine. Rav Yosef Mishloch Nesurin, olives whose pits are ready to fall out are awesome. Ask the Marhechi Dami Shlochim, what is the situation? Omer Rav Yosef Bar Chanina, Kol She'oich Sviyodai. Anytime when he picks up the olive, the Grimasai Nishmetis, and the pit falls out, that's in that category. Chagavim Haboim, grasshoppers that come from the shopkeeper's basket, we learned in the Mishnah are awesome. Tanabon, Hachagovim Vakarisim Vakafloites, Haboim and Aoitzim and Heptic Minasfina, they come from a warehouse or from the boat, Mutarim. However, Hanim Karim Bekat Luz Lufnechan Vani, but what is sold in the shop, Asurin. Neshim Zalf Yain Aleim, because he pours wine over there, Beken Yain Tapuchim Shalav Tachavim, similarly apple wine, apple cider sold by the Goy, Haboim and Aoitzim and Heptic Minaslulu Mutarim, because the Akum doesn't put into them, and we don't need to be concerned they put any wine in it, because if the wine would be put in there for a long term, it'll ruin it. However, if they come just from what he has in front of him, since wine was cheaper than apple cider, we have to be concerned, and he's about to sell it, so he's not worried about them getting ruined because he keeps them there for such a long time. They're awesome. Once Rebbe had stomach pains. Oma, klum adam yedeya, yayin tapuch shalad kham asa mutter. May we drink apple cider of the Akum? First, my father, one time my father had this type of ailment. They brought him Akum apple cider that was 70 years old. And he got better. You had this information about the Mitzureini and you didn't tell me. They found one Akum that 300 barrels of apple cider that was 70 years old. The shots of Nisrapa, that he gave the world to people that should watch things and put them away for tzaddikim who need them. From here we see the Rishonim already say that he was looking for kosher apple cider. Why was he looking for kosher apple cider if he was a chayla and he could, and even if he was a chayla she'ein by sakana? So Parshim, the Rishonim make 2 points. Here, since he was drinking kederach hanasai, and he wasn't a chayla she'esh by sakana, and he was drinking it in a normal fashion, we have to be stricter. And some Mefarshim go even further, that we discussed this previously. When it comes to macholos asuris, they were particularly careful, and even when it came to a medicine, unless it was absolutely necessary, they looked only for kosher medicine. V'chein l'tshuma. The Mishnah ended with the words v'chein l'tshuma. My v'chein l'tshuma. I'm Rav Sheshes. Mishnah refers to the situation l'koyin ha'chosh limka tshuma l'shem chulin, that a koyin who has an abundance of tshuma is selling it, but he's selling it as chulin, because chulin, we know, is more expensive than tshuma. So the Mishnah is teaching us lefanav, only the truma that's in front, only the produce that's in front of him is usur, because we have to be concerned that maybe he substituted the truma with chulin, the chulin with truma. Abba meraitzim and heptikum naslula, what came from the warehouse or from the boat is mutter, because it's two simatis. Perhaps I'll be caught and they'll prohibit all of my food, and therefore to avoid that he doesn't tamper with anything that he has in the warehouse. For as the Rishonim explained, if Chazal are going to ask for something, they're going to only ask for what's right in front of him. So the food that's right in front of him, he is not as concerned, because even if they're going to prohibit it, it's not such a large amount, he's willing to take the risk. But he's not willing to risk his entire stock in his warehouse, that if it turns out that he's doing something wrong, they're going to prohibit that entire stock, and then he'll end up in a situation that he will have had a very significant loss. Hanulach ein mamidin, hanulach ein mamidin, hanulach ein mamidin.